Now it's my pleasure to introduce our presenter for today, Dave Leroux, and he'll be talking about the new co-housing project. That's all I'm going to say in Regina, because he's going to tell you more, but I will give you a little background to Dave. Dave Leroux is a retired information technology project manager who is passionate about the benefits of living in a respectful, caring, and sharing community. He and his wife, Lil, and son, Roger, first became interested in co-housing after they attended a visioning workshop in search of a better residential option. Since then, they and other like-minded families and households have been growing in numbers and working on a project to create Prairie Spruce Commons, Regina's first co-housing community. Please join me in welcoming Dave Leroux.
Can you hear me okay? Is it on? Yeah? Thank you, Ingrid. I look around the room today and I do see some faces that I recognize, so I hope I'm not repeating too much of the story here today. But we always love the opportunity to share our story, and I'm really happy to be here today. I'm particularly moved by, because you call yourself a fellowship, you can see the elements of the person, the personal intentions and things like that. And I really do appreciate that. I enjoyed that tremendously. So I'm going to talk for about 15 minutes, hopefully, and allow some time for questions and answers. And you'll have to bear with me while I try to work through here a little bit. There we go. We have some members of our community here today, and I'll just give you their first names. I have Faye and Jean and Joyce and Murray, and we like to travel in little groups. Pardon me? Community, that's what we're all about, but it's also because we like to make ourselves available to answer questions and that kind of thing. So, and we support each other because we all have a different story and we all have little bits, tidbits of specialties and knowledge of our project. So I'm going to talk about three things today, a little bit about what is co-housing, about our project in particular, Prairie Spruce Commons, and I'll just touch on the benefits of co-housing. And, you know, in this day and age, everything is lists, so I'll talk about 10 benefits. What you see here is a picture that we took at the United Way, because we often meet there. And these are members of our community. We're holding up a little key, and it's on the occasion of our unit selection ceremony. And we thought, well, we don't have a building yet, but we should have a little key to show that we've got a unit. So we were very happy on that day. And you can see me. Well, that's not going to work, is it? There I am there, and there's my wife. There's Faye, who's here today, and Murray. But what is co-housing? Well, it started in Denmark in the 70s, and it spread to Europe, France, Germany, various other countries. Came to North America in the 80s, starting with the States, and then eventually came to Canada. It's all around the world, New Zealand, Australia, and in Canada we've got about 11 established communities, and I think there's a number that are forming at the same time. Some of the key aspects here is it's about community, and it's about, you know, it's a form of intentional community. And not, there's no religious connotation or anything, but people have come together in a purposeful way, but by design. So it's intentional in that way. And it allows us to have the privacy that we want in our own private units, but also have the community around us that we seek and that we value because of all the benefits that we see in that. So co-housing, there are some typical elements in co-housing. There's always an area for sharing, and that could be, it can be referred to as a common house, although it won't necessarily be a separate building, but it's a common space. And that's often a big eating area and a shared kitchen, even though all the households within a co-housing community are fully self-contained with their own kitchens and everything. Part of building community is coming together and sharing a meal. So there's always that key element. But there are other shared things as well, and I'll get into a little bit about what our community has in terms of the extent of the shared spaces. We have a lot of shared spaces. And what those do is there's all kinds of benefits to that in terms of cost savings and on an ongoing basis. Not so much when we build it, but as we operate it and move on and live there. So there's those good things about it. It's pedestrian friendly. There's always an element of environmental stewardship in a co-housing community. How can we make a lighter footprint on the earth and consume fewer resources? So the emphasis is on people and pedestrians versus cars. And cars are often relegated to the outskirts of the community or underground or that kind of thing. And there are fewer cars. You'll have car sharing where people, and there's car sharing programs in Regina already, but where you'll get together and share a vehicle. So rather than have the consumption of each person having their own and all the natural resources that go into that. Another key element is that it's, sorry, I'm going to put this over here so it doesn't interrupt. Another key element is that it's designed, managed, and maintained by residents. We as a community have all been on a design journey, and the design is coming together. We still have a couple of workshops that we're doing where we're getting into the particulars, the fit and finish of things like cupboards and that. But right from the very beginning, we were involved in workshops with our architects as a community and working together, coming up with the concept, what are the things we want, what are the things that are important to us as a community, things like natural light, things like reduced utility costs, so insulation, those kinds of things. It's managed and maintained by residents. To the extent that we're able to do those things, there's probably some things that technologically we wouldn't be able to do. If something goes wrong with the boiler system for the in-floor heating, you know, we may not be able to do that. On the other hand, we may have some engineers that join the community that are very knowledgeable of that, right? So each person brings their own talents and abilities and the willingness to share those with the community. So it's the other element is it's governed by residents using a consensus decision-making model. What that does is everyone is encouraged to participate in that model and share their ideas, participate in the discussions. It takes a little longer, but the decisions are way better. And we respect everyone's opinion. And we reach a level of consensus, which is we don't necessarily all have to love the decision, but we don't reject the decision. So there's different levels of support. And what that does, rather than have a majority vote, when you have a majority vote, you have some winners and you have some losers. The ones that vote against, you know, don't get their way. So what does that do to the spirit of the community and the culture, right? So in consensus, we all come together and we reach a level of agreement. Again, it takes a little longer, but there's a dynamic that goes on in that discussion. And people are drawn out into the discussion because you're going to have some people that hold back and aren't as willing to jump in and offer their opinion. So we make sure through facilitation that we get everyone's input. Co-housing creates a village of all ages. I think in our case and in many, many co-housing communities, it's an intergenerational kind of community where you have families with young children and you have middle-aged people and you have seniors. There's a new concept that's kind of spreading around as well as we get the so-called boomer generation aging where it's more senior co-housing. So they might have some age category that comes into play there. But I think the majority of co-housing communities are intergenerational, and they see the value of sharing and mixing the generations, seniors mentoring the little kids and, you know, sharing, benefiting mutually from that arrangement, right? And you can see in this picture here the different age categories, a little boy, a grandpa and grandma. You see multicultural elements in here as well. Not that this represents our community, but it represents the philosophy that we're trying to achieve in our community. A common house, I talked about some of the common spaces, and a common eating area is an element of co-housing. There's nothing compulsory about sharing meals, but again, that's a way to get to know your neighbor and foster relationships and whatever, just like you're sharing here today in your celebration. The meal time is a great way to come together as well. So that takes a space and a kitchen attached to it. You may potluck. I heard potluck in the announcements today. So where everybody just brings and you mix. Another model is where some of the households will take turns and prepare meal for everybody. I think historically the way co-housing started in Denmark is you had young working families that had very hectic lives with childcare and working and coming home and trying to prepare meals. And they found out that, well, if everybody took turns, there'd be some evenings where you could pay attention to your kids and you didn't have to worry about the meal because someone else had taken the turn to prepare the meal. So the benefits of it started to become apparent. I talked a little bit about environmental stewardship, and this is a key element, I think, of co-housing. It's ecologically sustainable, not the urban sprawl that's so typical in North America. You know, we don't have a shortage of land, so we just waste it, you know, squander it. So what they do in co-housing, clustered housing, it can be an apartment or it can be row housing or something like that. The point is it takes less space. It's a higher density model. And it preserves land for other things such as gardens or green space or what have you. The homes are smaller, and that's because you have all this shared amenities and shared space. You don't need a guest suite or a guest bedroom in your apartment because there are some that can be shared for visiting relatives and family or friends or what have you. And because you have access to, you know, the common dining, or you have exercise rooms or whatever, you don't need a big place because you don't spend as much time in your apartment. It's fair to say you don't have to mingle, but if you're not inclined to mingle, you probably aren't interested in living in co-housing because the design facilitates that, where you encounter your neighbor through shared spaces and gathering spaces and what have you. The smaller homes, though, then take less construction materials and take less energy to heat and that kind of thing. Sharing the items, I talked about sharing skills and abilities and talents. There's also an element of sharing items, and that's, for example, you have this kitchen. Well, maybe we don't all need a deep fryer because there's one in the kitchen down there and you can go and use it. Or we don't all need a snowblower anymore because, you know, that's the one I like because I have a snowblower and I have to use it. But we're down, you know, in the co-housing community, I think we'd be down a few snowblowers. So what does our community look like? I'm hoping this isn't too much of a sales pitch, but I just wanted you to get a flavor of how we've evolved here. This is an architect's rendition of our building. It's an apartment-style building, three stories with underground parking. This isn't necessarily the color scheme that's going to happen, but we are having, you'll see we have a garden space. We have anything where you see red or salmon color or whatever, those are our common spaces, and I'll get into detail about what we have in our common spaces later. But some key attributes here, you'll see some solar panels, photovoltaic solar. We'll be putting that into our community at some point so that we can feed energy back into the grid and therefore save some money. Eventually, there's a payback period for that. And it will reduce the cost of operating the common space, that kind of thing. The children's play area you see out here, but you'll see in the plans too because we want to be intergenerational, it's important that we have facilities and places for kids to play, et cetera, right? That's their own space, so we have those things designed in. You'll see a rooftop terrace here, and we don't have private terraces. or private apart or balconies. And there's several reasons for that. A balcony is something that's kind of seasonal, and it eventually becomes a storage place for things, especially in an apartment where storage is at a premium. So what we've done instead, I don't know if you can see it very well, but there's a little jut out here, and we call these Juliet Bay windows. So it's windows, it's a jut out, there's windows on three sides that open, you get cross ventilation, but it's a space that you can use year round, and it gives you the sense of being outside. I think that's all I'm going to say about that. Now, there's underground parking, so you don't see a big parking lot. This is just for visitor parking back here. This is a west exposure. So eventually we'll have a neighbor on this side here. Over here, that's Batten Boulevard, so that faces north going that way. And then over here is the south. There's a laneway. So I've talked a little bit about our common area features. We've got this community kitchen and dining area, children's play areas. When I mentioned guest suites, we actually have two guest suites, and they're like a full bath and bedroom. They could probably accommodate six guests or something like that, depending on how many beds and whatever we put in there. I should mention, when I talk about guest suites or just in general, the building is fully accessible. It's been designed, what's the word for it? For designing for universal design. And that's where, it's accessible to people in wheelchairs and what have you. So you enter in at the ground level. The elevator has two doors because you come in at ground and then you go up half a story, get over the parkade, and can then go out on the other door to get into the living spaces. And it'll be things like, light switches down at a lower level. It'll be things like taps on the faucets with levers rather than handles, and doorways that are wide enough, all that kind of stuff. And people can select before it's built if they want their unit to be fully accessible. And so that can all, it's all anticipated. We have an exercise area. It's kind of a flex space where we can expand with mats and whatever, but there'll be machines that the community will put in there, you name it, a bicycle or a rowing machine or that kind of thing. Music and media, where the kids can do their video games or whatever. We're not going to have a television in our common space. It's going to be for visiting. So if you want to have a big screen TV, you'll go to the music and media area. A sewing arts and crafts area, a very nicely lit area. We're calling it sewing arts and crafts, but it can be whatever the community decides to do with it, right? The terraces, I showed you a little bit. What I didn't tell you in the diagram is we have a workshop area, which is about the size of a two-car garage, where we can do woodwork or do some small mechanics or bicycle repair or that kind of thing. We'll have an office, and what's not in the list here is common laundry. Most of the units are plumbed for laundry, but again, in the interest of sharing resort or preserving or reducing our demands for resources, we'll use a common laundry mostly. And another opportunity to visit. It's close to the kitchen, so you go and have a coffee and that kind of thing. I should point out, in the context of the music and media room, and in general, we have extra sound insulation. It's a wooden building, but it's being built to be equivalent to a concrete building in terms of soundproofing. And there's even more soundproofing in the music and media room. So the private units are in different sizes, from studio, one bedroom plus den, two bedroom plus den. So they go from about 550 square feet at the smallest to about 1150 square feet at the largest. I mentioned before they're all fully self-contained, with, kitchen and dining and what have you, but they are smaller. In-floor heating and cooling. So when your feet are warm, you're warm. So there's a central boiler system that will circulate heat through the floor. And then we run the loops underneath the parkade to get a little bit of cooling that we can then circulate in the summertime. I mentioned the soundproofing, the covered parking. The lower utility costs, back to our environmental stewardship, are well above industry norms right now. Our 40 insulation in the walls, our 60 in the ceilings. We've got light because people wanted light. There's lots of windows in the units. We even have light filtering through the units into the hallway. So actually we have the doors will have a little light panel, your entrance door from the hallway, opaque or whatever, but it will let light through. And there's even a little window over your kitchen sink that can let light through as well. And it'll be up to you if you want to put blinds there to preserve privacy or if you want to be able to see your neighbors while you're doing your dishes. Solar ready, you saw the solar panels. Gray water recycling ready, we are anticipating or we're thinking about this. We're on a journey with gray water. You know, we live in a semi-arid environment here where water is not that plentiful, really. We think, oh yeah, well, you know, we've got the wells and whatever. But you can tell by your utility bills now with water and sewer that it's an expensive commodity. So if we can reduce our use of it, that would be useful. So we're exploring options there. We might end up putting redundant plumbing into the units to be able to facilitate gray water recycling. I've talked about the in-floor heating and cooling, upgraded windows, LEED gold certifiable. Is leadership in energy and environmental design, I think is what the acronym stands for. So that's we're not going to certify because there's a huge administrative cost to do that. But we've talked to our architects and he's done an assessment.
Okay.
Yes.
Explain gray water.
Okay. Gray water is water that's been used for washing, laundry or bathing or dishes, not toilets. But we can use that gray water, filter it, whatever, treat it some way, bring it back in to flush toilets. Our location, I'm just about out of time here. So our location is ideally located. It's close to things. This is a walkability index map. We're close to the downtown. We're close to schools, close to shopping, close to restaurants, close to the park. Close to the university. Again, emphasis on walkability because why do we have to drive everywhere? And there's, of course, good public transit going down Broad Street. We're near the corner of College and Broad. And that's the building. This is the corner. If you go, this is the Naked Bean Coffee Shop. If you go to the end here, there's two empty lots in there, and we're back there. This is a Google picture. It's a little bit outdated now because they're already building another thing on that corner over there. So benefits, safe and supportive. It's safe because you know everybody. You know your neighbor. And you feel, you know, you would recognize immediately if there was a strange face. And if it was a strange face, maybe it's a family member. But because of your nature and your friendliness, you're going up and talk to them. So that's a totally different approach to saying, oh, that's a stranger. I wonder what they want from me, right? And the support comes from knowing your neighbor and being there for each other. The social interaction, because of all the common spaces, lots of opportunity to socialize and mingle. Not exclusively, because you have your outside social circles as well. Contribution. If people feel that they can contribute in a way, in any way, shape, or form, it gives them a better purpose in life, makes them feel good about themselves, contributes to longevity, all that kind of thing. Little kids this big can contribute. People that are older can contribute. Everybody can contribute in a way, right? And this provides an opportunity because of our sharing. We share resources. I've talked about snow blowers, but, you know, lawnmowers, pots and pans, whatever, exercise machines. Child care. Maybe your grandkids aren't local, but if there's young kids in the community, well, you have some that you can borrow. And the young families are more than happy to have that support, right? So environmentally friendly, I already talked about those elements, trying to reduce our impact on the environment. The green space, we will have a community garden in our plan. The lowered living cost, the cost of our place is higher than normal because of all the shared space and because of all the upgrades that we've got in terms of insulation and whatever. that's a bit of a deterrent. But the long-term cost will be cheaper because of the reduced utilities and what have you. The time saving, again, sharing meals and helping each other, and the resident participation through the decision making and the committees and whatever. I'd be fibbing if I didn't say there was ongoing work involved. Now through the development phase, we have umpteen committees that we're involved in. And while we're managing, once we move in, there will be committees as well. Helen was telling me how there's committees here and people get involved and whatever. So you have an idea of what that's all about. So, just so if you want to find out more, we have a website, www.prairiespruce.com. We have a prayer, Facebook presence, and we have an information center open every Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 4. Where you can look at plans and talk to community members that are there operating it. And that's where we're at today. So that's my presentation. Do we take questions now? Or we're going to be around after to answer questions as well. Hi.
Un moment, s'il vous plaît.
Thank you. That was wonderful. I was going to ask you, because that's the idea, I mean, I'm trying to find the longhouse concept that is native for thousands of years. But it is regarding, is it full ownership or is it cooperative ownership? Because there's a big difference. In Montreal, for example, because I used to work at the bank and people said, I want a mortgage, I want to sell my place. Said, no, you can't sell your place. You can only sell your shares of the co-op that you that you co-own, yeah. Or do they have full ownership of the unit?
This is like a condominium model. So it's not a cooperative legally. In our case, you can have co-housing communities that are cooperatives. In our case, you own your own private unit, and so you mortgage, you get whatever financing, however you would go buy a house or a condo somewhere. The shared ownership is all the common spaces, right? And so there will be condo fees and whatever that have to deal with the maintenance of that.
Hi, Dave. Wayne and I have been to one of your presentations.
I recognize the face, yeah.
And
that's
I...
Dave.
Yeah.
That's the gardener. It's... Okay. What I'm wondering about is, it's my understanding you're under construction now?
We're developing the construction documents, and we have to have them done to get, in order to get the actual building permits.
Yes.
And then when that's all approved, then they can start tilling the soil.
Okay.
That's not the only thing that's determining our construction start. We have to reach a certain level of sales, if I can use that word, or subscription, or community members coming in, because we're financing our own units. We have to have people that can bring their money to buy the unit, because we as the other community members couldn't afford to buy units that weren't already spoken for.
So, is there a point? Yeah, and you don't have to say what that point is, where you have a certain number of units sold. I've heard of other co-housing developments where they have allowances to rent out some of the units. I'm just curious if you have a cutoff point where you say, yes, it's a go, and if we don't get the last one sold, we rent.
We've already agreed as a community that we can rent units. As long as the owner of that unit is a community member living in the community. I don't want somebody from another country or whatever owning just purely for an investment, or not I. You know, we don't want just someone doing it purely for an investment purpose, because we're all about community. And how, if you're not there to participate, how are you part of community? But we have several models that will allow for rental. And I can talk to you some more about that. So that's one aspect of it. The other question you had was, you know, what's that threshold for starting to turn the soil? It changes. You know, we've got a moving plan, and then we say, well, if this happens, we could do this, and if this happens, we could do that. And we have targets, and if we don't meet that target, then what's our next target, and that kind of thing. So, again, because we can't afford as individuals to carry a bunch of empty units, we'd have to put down payments and whatever, even in a rental scenario. Probably about 23 or 27 units we'd be great. But we would start construction before that. We believe the developer would also step up for a few units if there were some empty. And if we have a pattern of subscription, as people, if we can show a trend of people coming into the community, we can say, okay, we'll extrapolate that and we'll start construction because we have about 15 months to complete the construction. So if we're able to get this many in this 6 months, we should be able to get the rest of them in the 15 months.
Hi, my name is Weibo.
Yes, and, I recognize you, Weibo.
My question is about your name and with the word commons in it.
Yeah.
What does that mean for you guys?
You know, it had an evolution. It started out as kind of a neat name for a building, but I think it has a lot to do with the culture as well, the fact that we're community. If you look up, I think, if you look in the dictionary, there's different architectural definitions of a commons. But it's really about the community.
Thank you for coming. Mm-hmm. Did I hear you say the word condo?
Yeah.
So would you be registered under the Condominium Property Act?
We will be at move-in. Right now, we're a development corporation. And so we're registered with the Information Services Corporation or, you know, the Ministry of Justice Corporations branch. And so we have all the legal aspects of that. You can go and search us and see who the directors are and that kind of thing. And we issue shares because although you're going to own your own unit, now we have a share in the journey. And that share is what gets you. That defines your community membership until we actually build and move in, and then we roll over and convert to a condominium association with bylaws and what have you. Bylaws will initially conform to Saskatchewan legislation, but we've already got policies in the works and under development in our membership manual that will roll into our bylaws. For example, regarding pets and things like that.
And you haven't got very deeply into the finances probably yet. The month to month, for example, what condo fees might be, or
what we've done there, because we have people ask us that, right? How much are the condo fees going to be? And we can only go by other condominium developments. And when you talk to developers there, they use a ballpark of 25 cents per square foot as condo fees. That's right, Amory. 25 cents a square foot. Yeah. We're hoping, well, we thought it would be cheaper because we're going to be doing all this work ourselves. But what happens is because we're owning this building and we want to make sure it's well maintained for 100 years, right? This is going to be on the landscape for a long time. We'll probably have bigger reserves in making sure we're doing the maintenance and improvements more diligently than a typical condo might. So our fees will probably be comparable to other condos.
I was just wondering, has anyone else done something like this in Saskatchewan that you know of?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, in Saskatoon, it's called Wolf Willow. They happen to be a seniors co-housing development, but they've been in operation for a couple of years. We've all gone as a community to a tour there, and we've coordinated that with them. They're very great folks and more than happy to share their experience. I had a personal friend who went there last weekend and got a tour of it. So they've helped us along the way, you know, especially in the initial stages. They came to meetings because some of our members were familiar with co-housing already. Some of us weren't. And so we had lots of questions as well. And so they shared some of their perspectives. But of course, not just in Saskatchewan. There's about 11 or so in Canada. There's more of them in BC because of the climate. There's a couple of in Alberta. So there's actually another one in development in Saskatoon as well. We're the only one under. Well, I know that there's another group that's thinking about stuff, a cooperative. So, you know, it's not a new idea. It's been around a long time.
In Saskatoon, what are the fees?
The condo fees?
Yeah.
We know what's included in their condo fees because they gave us a list. Well, this is included, this included, this included, this included. Murray, do you know that? Yeah. We could find that out if you want.
excuse me. In your talk, you mentioned the large, the smallest and largest sizes, and I got 1,150 square feet for the largest. What were the smallest?
The smallest are a studio. So what you have is kind of a nook.
I want square feet. I'm just looking.
Yeah. The smallest is 525.
525. Okay. So what would be the price to buy a 525, and what would be the price to buy 1150?
The 525 is just under 300, though.
Just under 300?
Yeah. And the 1150, the largest one. Of course, you know, there's lots of variability in the price depending on what floor you're on, that kind of thing. The 1125 or 500,000.
So it's not built yet?
Pardon me?
It's not built yet.
No. It's designed.
Thank you.
And we have land reserved for us. And we'll build it as we get enough community members. And we have 14 of 27 now, community members. Pardon me?
What did you say?
We have 14 of the households that are signed up out of 27.
Okay, I'll take one last question.
This isn't a question. You probably know this already, but I thought I'd share it with you anyway. Okay. I am the treasurer on our condo board, and our fees are about 800 a month, but for the our property management company. But one of the biggest, one of the things we always have to keep in mind, and I'm wondering if that would be different in your type of organization, is the fact that we have to put into our reserve fund $30,000 a year, and that is to look after anything. So part of the condo fees go towards what you pay, and anybody who lives in a condo go towards reserve fees fund in case there's something that has to be rebuilt, so that you don't have to walk around getting money. I mean, how would you like it if you have to put a new roof on, and then you have to, each person in the building, each outfit has to pay $2,000 or $3,000? Well,
is that your total annual contribution,
$30,000? $30,000 for the reserve fund. No, no, that's not the total contribution of everything, but that, no, no, that part of the condo fees, that part of the condo fees go towards the $30,000 a year. $30,000 a year, minimum.
And that's for the entire community, right? That's not per household.
Yeah.
See, and actually, I understand that legislation recently has gotten quite strong, it's been strengthened about reserve fees, making sure that there's adequate reserve fees, because you had a lot of conversions of apartment blocks that just went like that, and there was no reserves. And so the legislation has been improved to enforce reserve fees. In our case, we have plans. We're hoping and quite strongly expecting that we will have a certain amount of reserve already built in the bank when we move in. Because of our budget, we've got contingencies, we've got various elements in there. It may not be the entire amount of reserve to start with, but.
The idea of the $30,000, so I just wanted to say that that according to the experts, if you put away $30,000 a year, you'll have enough money forever.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Sandra was just saying her place, they put away $70,000 per year. Wow. So thank you so much. It was very informative. As you can see, there are still lots of questions, and I know there's lots of more information. So you have regular meetings, too.
Oh, yeah. We meet twice a month as a community.
Yeah, if people are interested to know more, and I assume you'll be around for coffee afterwards downstairs.
We would love to answer more questions for coffee, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.